Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Okay, so my name is Phil Comer, and this workshop is called Children Matter. And we're so glad you're here. I'm going to talk. It's kind of great that we have some family life pastors and children's pastors here, because so it kind of gives me some direction on where I want to go, because this is an evangelist conference. And so I want to talk, of course, about priority reaching children with the gospel, but I also now that I know some of you are in children and family ministry, I'll talk a little bit about the family too. So marriage, family, children, when you stop and think about it, no human came up with the idea, right? This was God's idea. This was God's plan way back in Genesis when he saw Adam and he said everything is good. But when he saw Adam, he said it's not good that he's alone, created Eve, and you know the story. And he said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And so they were given this task. But God put the family together. It's the basic unit of society. And when homes are strong, communities are strong. And unfortunately, the reverse is also true. When families don't function the way God designed, things fall apart at the seams, aka look at the United States of America. And so I just think there's a resurgence in the understanding that even when it comes to evangelism and reaching this world, we cannot neglect the family, because this is really where it's all supposed to begin. Building a marriage, a home, a family that truly thrives and is blessed by God starts with you personally, starts with me personally, right here in our own hearts. I grew up in the Bay Area in California, and I believed in God, but I didn't have a clue who Jesus was. And most of my friends were Protestant or Catholic. We all went to church on Sunday. 1 hour, it meant nothing to us. And I remember driving by Catholic churches, and most of them have, you know, Christ on the cross. I didn't even know what that was all about. And when I came to the Lord, I was playing in a rock band, and I was radically saved. It took me a few years to land in a church, and then I heard that you should memorize scripture, and I started memorizing these scriptures all about the heart, and like I was like all in. I mean, for me to get out of this band, we never made it famous, but we thought we were going to be the next whatever, you know, the next Beatles, whatever, which we weren't. But anyway, it was like the big surrender, you know, which is laughable when I look back at it. But I remember memorizing verses, and because I wanted to be a passionate Jesus follower, and one of them was 2 Chronicles 16:9, for the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth that he may strongly support those whose hearts are completely his. And I thought, that's the kind of person I want to be. And this is before I got married or anything. And then Jeremiah 9:23-24, let not a wise man boast of his wisdom, let not the mighty man boast of his might, but let him who boast of this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord who exercises loving kindness, justice, and righteousness on earth. For I delight in these things, says the Lord. And I was memorizing all these verses, and I realized I want to be all in. And so to all of you here today, when we think about family, our own kids, or the ministries we're leading, whatever we're doing, we have to step back periodically and say, am I a passionate Jesus follower? Is my very life modeling the joy that there is when we follow Jesus, when we give him anything, everything? And a godly, Jesus-centered home is a powerful tool for evangelism. Way back when I finally went to Bible school in 1981, I wrote a paper, and my firstborn son, Jude's father, was 6 months old at the time. And I wrote this paper, and it was called The Godly Christian Home, The Ultimate Tool for Evangelism. And then I forgot all about that paper until gazillion years later, when our elders asked my wife and I to put this family conference together. And we went back and pulled out all our files, because it was all pre-computer, pre-laptops and stuff. And I go, oh my gosh, God put this in my heart way back when my son was 6 months old. I believed in this. And so it's nothing new. It's just been a resurgence in my heart. And I think there's a resurgence now amongst churches. They're realizing, hey, it's not enough to stick my kid in a youth group. It's not the youth pastor's job to lead him to Christ. It's my job to lead him to Christ. And this goes way back to Deuteronomy 6, which most of you know. It's called the Great Shema. And if you go way back, and when you start thinking about the family and children and the gospel, the place to begin is where God begins, which is, Hear, O Israel, Lord is our God, the Lord is one. And he's talking to the parents here. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. And so this is God talking, and he's talking to you and me today, but he's talking to the parents. Say, you need to love me. Like that song we sing, I will love you, Lord, my strength. I will love you, Lord, my shield. I will love you, Lord, my rock. Forever all my days, I will love you, God. So it starts with you and me. It has to be modeled for our kids. But back to Deuteronomy. So God says that, and then he doesn't stop there. He goes on, and he talks to the parents, and he says, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. So basically we say, when you're driving in the car, when you're walking your dog, when anything comes up, when you're watching a movie and you say, click, we're fast forwarding. In fact, we're going to turn this movie off because it doesn't honor Jesus Christ or whatever it might be. So it's the parents that are to teach these things diligently to their sons and their daughters. So what my wife and I like to say is God's plan A for sharing the good news of Jesus, making disciples, is and has always been right at home, parents. Now, I'm not saying that God is using other means of evangelism. I had the privilege of working with Luis Palau for 9 years on staff. And other years before that, I was worship leader, traveling with him, doing these big, huge festivals and seeing the multitudes of people coming to Christ. God is an evangelist, and he's going to use everybody who wants to be used by him. He's going to use every means. Tim Byrne is here. He's a skater, and he skates and gives his testimony. Skate church. He's going to use everything. But God's plan A, if you go back to Deuteronomy, was parents. It wasn't that one day your kid would wander into an event and hear something that you never told them. Now, if parents don't know the Lord, how can they pass on their faith? Because you can't pass on what you don't possess, right? And so that's why we need evangelists all over the place. But as a follower of Jesus, my wife and I realized, both of us together, that this was God's plan A. He wanted us to pray and look for an opportunity to lead our four kids to Jesus and make disciples of our own kids. So this is his plan A. Mothers and fathers whose lives have been and still are being radically transformed by Jesus, who then realize the privilege they have to pass on their faith to the next generation, starting with their own kids. Which is why the church that we planted in Portland, children's ministry was just top priority. Like money, priority, events. We wanted kids to have so much fun and hear the gospel so clearly they couldn't wait to get there. And by the time we planted a Solid Rock in 2004, our youngest son was 12. And so he taught four-year-olds for like 4 years. And Saturday nights, I'd be finishing my sermon. I said, okay, Matt, let's sit down and go over your teaching. It's going to be 5 minutes long. You know, what's your verse? What's your story? Well, Dad, this is what we're doing. Okay, what story are you going to tell, you know? Because I realized that, and he was learning that he came to church with a job to do. And he was teaching four-year-olds, and then he graduated to middle schoolers later. And then he eventually became a middle school pastor and a high school pastor. But he started young. So this is something that began in my wife's and my heart way back when we were brand new believers, as I said, and it became we never talked about someday teaching a parenting conference or doing a parenting ministry. We just thought for our own kids. I was a young pastor. If my kids don't follow the Lord, what am I doing up preaching sermons and leading worship? Because actually, to be an elder in 1 Timothy 3, you must be above reproach. You must be a one-woman man, committed to your wife. You must have children who believe, for if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how can he take care of the church of God? So in other words, I'm not even qualified to be an elder if my own family's apart, falling apart. And so I love to remind anybody who wants to be in ministry, it starts in the home. It starts with you. Are you walking with God in purity and holiness and godliness? And is your home, no home is perfect, no father's perfect, no mother's perfect, but is your home a Jesus-centered home, and can people look at your home and at your marriage and say, you know what, that's sort of like, I think, what God wanted, and that's sort of like the direction that I want to go in, because ministry is really about modeling even more than it's about what we teach, but it's also about what we model for people. So we had this dream for our future as brand new believers, and when Jude's father, our firstborn, John Mark, came into the world. And you know, you look at that firstborn, you realize, God, this is a real, like, full-on person. And we didn't have a faith. We had parents who believed in God, but we weren't raised. They wouldn't have called themselves Jesus followers or even knew what that meant. So they didn't pass it on to us. So, like, we didn't have really any models with our parents, so we started looking around the church to see who we might be able to go to, and we found a few people. And you start thinking, well, what if my son or daughter chooses against God? What if he never comes to the Lord? And you realize, gosh, I want to be with my own kids for all eternity. So of course you want them to come to the Lord. And so we started searching the scriptures, and then we had three more kids, Rebecca and Elizabeth and Matthew, and we wanted them to love the Lord with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. So we really gave the better part of our lives to this quest. And even though I was called to vocational ministry, our family was the most important thing, and these later days we're actually helping other parents do the same through our intentional parenting ministry. And then you think about your family. You can think, well, we're just one family. I mean, that we're just like us and two kids, in our case four kids. Like, but let me tell you something that I think is going to excite you. Until you do the math, and we've got some slides for this, and this is where I think you will find the energy time and time again to keep doing what you're called to do, whether you're in family ministry or just you care about evangelism. Because like I say, this is God's plan A. So we had four children. So let's say you have four children. Well, maybe say four children, that's considered, he's got seven, but four, which was pretty common when I was a kid, mostly Catholic families, because they didn't believe in birth control, tend to have seven, eight, nine kids. Protestants had fewer, but still, like, if you had four or five kids, nobody looked at you strangely. Now, if you have four, it's like, you have four kids, you know? So let's say you only have three. And then along the way, God brings another person into your life whose family fell apart, and you become the spiritual parent to them. And you have four. And they choose to be part of your family. And you lead those four children to Jesus over a period of time. You pray, you look for opportunities, you lead them to Christ. And they grow up and they become disciples, who then in turn make disciples. Well, now that is a total of 16 full-on Jesus-following disciples. Tracking with me? Okay, carry that on for 12 generations. Now, a generation is about 25 years biblically, for the span of 300 years. So 300 years later, if these parents lead their kids to Christ, you know what the number is? 16,777,216 passionate Jesus-following disciples who make disciples. That's in a span of 300 years. Now, that is more than the total city population of all of Portland, New York City, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Boston, San Francisco, and Seattle and San Diego combined. Talking city limits, not surrounding areas. And those are not just empty numbers, those are people. Those are John Marks, Judes, Marks, Bryans, whoever it might be. Now, I know what some of you may be thinking, yeah, but it breaks down because not everybody's going to come to Jesus. And of course not, because some people will not choose the Lord. But what if half of them did? So those of you who are parents, just think, you're not only pouring your life into your son or daughter. If Jesus tarries, I mean, we all want him to come back soon. I mean, I want him to come back soon, but like Paul said, it would be far better to go and be with Jesus, but it seems to be that he wants me here for your sake. So if you're here, you're for others' sake, to pour out your life for other people. But even if half of these kids came to the Lord, wow, it's just amazing what God can do. And it's sort of like interest that keeps compounding. You know, if you're 25 years old and you put $1,000 in a fund, you let it sit there, by the 60 years later, it's worth thousands upon thousands of dollars. And if you want to get really crazy, if you go three more generations beyond the 12 to 15 generations, the number is 1,073,741,824, well over a billion children who are telling their children the great things that God has done and how Jesus has rescued them. This is God's plan A. It's multiplication. It always has been. And by the way, this is in the Bible, Psalm 78. We'll stick it on the screen here. Listen to Psalm 78. This is nothing new, what I'm talking about. There's nothing new under the sun, right? Oh, my people, listen to my instruction. I will teach you hidden lessons from our past, stories our ancestors handed down to us. We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders. For he commanded our ancestors to teach them to their children so the next generation might know them, even the children yet to be born, and here it is, that they may arise and tell them to their children. So each generation should set its hope anew on God. I love it. I just love it. To realize that the fruit of what we are doing is going to outlive us. And it just gets me up in the morning. In his book, Why Children Are the Next Best Thing, Wes Stafford, who's the founder of Compassion International, said this: the time has come for a paradigm shift. Children are too important and too intensely loved by God to be left behind or left to chance. Wow. See, children are born of wonder, full of wonder, innocence. I mean, sinners. If you have a toddler, you know what I'm talking about, right? But cute little sinners. But their hearts are so tender and they are so open to stories about Jesus and his mighty power. I really believe there's a new awakening that children are the next big thing. Children's evangelism was massive before I came to the Lord. And there's people that have been doing it all along. But I think a lot of evangelists or people focusing on evangelism aren't necessarily thinking about kids. And yet kids are the most open to the gospel, way more than adults. I mean, I've seen this in all my years with Luis Palau, traveling around. The older people get. I sat with one guy in England one night after our event. He was the music director for this church. And he played organ. It was like a more staid church, but people came from all over. And he had been in this church for 30 years. He was a church musician, not a Christian. And Luis Palau kept giving altar call after altar call after altar call. And he almost came. He was crying. And I said, can't you give your life to Jesus? I just can't quite do it. Because his heart was so hard. He'd rejected the gospel so many times. God was still trying to pull him to himself. And he was resisting. Whereas children, not so much so at all. Some of you who know missions, for years in mission, if you go to any missions conference, they talk about the 10-40 window, that most of the unreached peoples were between 10 and 40 degrees latitude north of the equator. That was the big missions thing for years, still is in many ways. But today, they're talking about the 4-14 window, age 4 to 14. This is the window that people are most open to hearing the good news of the gospel. And so we cannot neglect this, because children matter to Jesus. Now, Jesus made this really clear. Remember when his disciples were trying to keep kids away from him? He rebuked them. He said, let the children come to me. The kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. Wow, I love that. So children, Jesus said, hey guys, I'm not too busy for kids. I'm rebuking you, actually. The kingdom of God belongs to them. Our culture undervalues children. In my parents' generation, you'd hear some people say, children are to be seen and not heard, you know? Well, now it's that they'd be rarely seen but barely tolerated. If they're making too much noise, get them out of here. I don't want any kids in my meeting. I just wanted, you know, people do that. They go, no children allowed. This is an adult meeting, you know? And we shove kids to the side. And I think it's really, really sad. My wife and I want to change that. We want to remind a generation of parents, and you guys here today, how Jesus values children. Listen to this from Mark chapter 9. Jesus was talking about, if anybody wants to be great, he needs to be the servant of all. And to illustrate the truth, what did he do? Remember, he brought a little child in their midst. He stood him right in the midst of everybody. And he said, whoever receives one of these little children in my name is receiving or welcoming me. And whoever receives me is not receiving me, but him who sent me. And so Jesus says, not only do I love kids, they're the example I'm going to use. And then he went on to say, also in Mark, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him if with a heavy millstone hung around his neck, he had been cast into the sea. Wow. That's how much children matter to Jesus. And it also says in Mark, he took the children in his arms and he began blessing them and laying his hands upon them. They were bringing even their babies to him in order that he might touch them. We can't forget this. We've got to remember this. Jesus would not be okay with this attitude. Children should be rarely seen, put out of our meetings, and barely tolerated. Instead, he says, stop hindering them from coming to me. For a couple of reasons. They're a gift. You guys know Psalm 127. Children are a gift from the Lord. And not only are they a gift, I mean, they're a gift that is to be valued. Now, raising them is hard work at times. When we teach our parenting conference, we use the analogy of building a house. And we've been to Albania, a country north of Greece, and they have an old proverb. It's actually a Muslim proverb. Raising a child is like building a house. You know, it's not a one-week project or a, you know, two-year project. It's a lifelong project. And so it's hard work, but they're a gift, and they're a gift to be valued and to be treasured, just as Jesus told us to treasure them. But the last thing, and this is what I really want to kind of begin to wrap up with, and I'm going to have my grandson Jude share with you a little bit. They're a gift, and they're a gift to be valued, but the greatest thing, if you're a parent here today, the greatest thing you'll ever do is raise your children to follow the way of Jesus. There's nothing greater. I've been involved in some really exciting ministry that I didn't deserve to be a part of, an amazing church in the Bay Area that I got to be part of for 13 years, and working with Luis Palau and planting this church in Portland. It's all been, I don't deserve it, thank you, Lord, thank you, Lord. But the greatest privilege my wife and I ever had was our four kids, and now years later, seeing each of them having chosen to follow God, married people who walk with the Lord, and now we're seeing even our grandchildren start to follow Jesus. 3 John 4, jot that verse down, one of my favorite verses. I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth. Now, John is old when he says this, very old. And he's talking about the church, talking about the family of God. But as a parent, as a father, my wife as a mother, we have no greater joy. If we had to choose between $4 million and four kids walking with the Lord, we don't have to pray about it, right? I mean, we'll take the money, but you know. give me the four kids walking with the Lord. So there's no higher calling, there's no greater privilege, no more important task than leading your children to follow the way of Jesus. And so if you're doing evangelism, there's no greater calling than to also remember children, because Jesus said, don't hinder them from coming to me. And if you're a parent, your children are your legacy. They will most likely outlive you. Occasionally a parent dies first, but almost always they will outlive you. And if you pass your faith on to them, the things that God does in and through them will be part of your legacy and even part of your reward one day when you stand before the Lord. Psalm 127 says you're going to shoot your kids like arrows out into a lost and dying world. Happy is a man whose quiver is full of them, and they're going to be shot out into the earth to be used of God. So when it comes down to it, my wife and I, our greatest joy is that our kids are walking with the Lord, knowing that they're going to be with us in the new heaven and the new earth forever. There's just no greater joy than this. When we were just starting out raising kids, when I was going to Multnomah here in Portland in 1981, my wife came across a biography of Susanna Wesley, who was you heard of John and Charles Wesley, those were two of her kids, right? And who were two of the greatest evangelists ever to live, the Wesleys were. And so their mother, Susanna Wesley, raised 17 children, think of 7 plus 10 more, which seems ultimately crazy. But she came across this book, and I was studying in Bible school, and she was reading this book. She got it at a used Christian bookstore here in Portland, and so we'd be laying in bed at night, and the book was called Marriage to a Difficult Man. So she's sitting there reading this next to me. It was kind of weird. But people would clamor for her. But when John and Charles Wesley became famous, people would clamor for, what did you do to raise these two famous world-changing, world-class evangelists? And I'm going to read what she said. Now, it's a little bit old English, so just think. She said, no one can, is this a slide? No. No one can, without renouncing the world in the most literal sense, observe my method. And there are few, if any, that would entirely devote about 20 years of the prime of life in hopes to save the souls of their children, when they think that they can be saved without so much ado. For that was my principal intention. And my wife read that, and it just gripped her heart, and she read it to me. And from that point on, she devoted her life, the prime of her life, really. I mean, now she just turned 60. She doesn't look it. She looks way younger, and she's beautiful. But she would tell you the greatest thing I ever did in my career was 30-plus years of raising my kids. It's the greatest thing I ever did. And she knew that making much ado about the souls of her children was a big deal. Their walk with God, their coming to Christ, became her and our principal intention. And if she were here today, she wasn't able to make it, she would tell you she doesn't regret one moment. She doesn't regret the loss of a paycheck, nor the sacrifices or the doing without. She wouldn't tell you it was easy, or even that she always liked it, but she wouldn't even tell anybody to copy her. But she would say the one thing she does not regret is that she invested 30 of the best years of her life into raising our kids in the hope that they would choose to follow Jesus, which in our case they did. Now there's no guarantees, and so when we teach our parenting conference, we don't say, hey, we got this formula. You know, that was our biggest fear, that it would come across like, hey, it's all grace, and each one must make their own decision. My friend Luis Palau, I've heard him say in stadiums, God has no grandchildren, only children. Each generation must become the first generation. Each person, you don't get into heaven because your father was a pastor or whatever. But we wanted our kids to come to the Lord, and then we wanted them one day to hear the same words. I want Jude to hear the same words that I want to hear from Jesus. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master. Now, before I have Jude come up, and then we're going to have a time of questions, if anything you guys want to ask, and then we're going to pray for each other around the tables. But I just wanted to share this thing as I wrap up when we think about the significance of children. If you're not from Portland, you probably know that Nike is headquartered here in Portland on the west side. It's Nike's headquarters, world headquarters, and Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, still alive. Lives there, and he a couple years ago came out with his biography called Shoe Dog, and I got a copy of the book, and I haven't read the whole book, but I went to the end, because the very end of the book, he has a chapter on his regrets. When I see a billionaire who can buy anything he wants, go wherever he wants, he has his own private plane, he has a place over in Bend, Oregon, which is the cool resort in Oregon. He owns this world-renowned company. He can do anything he wants, go anywhere he wants, buy anything he wants. When he talks about regrets, I want to hear what he has to say. And this is what he said. First, he's kind of funny. He regrets that he thought Magic Johnson, if you're in an NBA, he thought Magic Johnson would never make it in the NBA. And he was like one of the best players ever. He regrets not being a better manager, that he had to lay people off during Nike's history, and he realizes he hurt people, and if he'd been a better business executive, a couple things like that. But then he says this, of course, above all, okay, this is billionaire Phil Knight, I regret not spending more time with my sons. Maybe if I had, I could have solved the encrypted code of Matthew Knight, which is his son who died. I believe when he was in his late 20s, but they didn't stop there. And he goes on to say, and yet I know that this regret, losing his son, and looking back saying, I lost my son, and I didn't spend enough time with him while I was building this company, and I regret that. But beyond that, he said, that regret clashes with my secret regret that I can't do over again. God, how I wish I could relive the whole thing. Wow. I don't want to get to the end of my life and look back and say, I blew it. I was so busy doing stuff for Jesus, serving the King, doing my events, doing my stuff, while my kids were saying, Dad, can we hang out? You know, reading the Bible to my kids, taking them out for ice cream, making them a priority in my life. I don't want to look back and wish, now we all look back and wish we hadn't done certain things. There's nobody looks back and says, wow, I should write a book. We wrote a book, but anyway, you know, do what we did. No, we all look back because, you know, we're not perfect parents. But my wife and I don't look back with these horrible, like we missed it. Like we made this left turn and we should have made a right turn. And I just wanted to say that to all of you as you think about your calling and your ministry and what you're gonna do with the days that he has given you. You will never regret giving your life to your own kids, and you'll never regret any time you spend with any kid. And as you do evangelism, don't forget the 4:14 window, okay? Because children matter to Jesus. All right, that's the end of my talk. But I'm gonna have Jude come up here. Come on up, buddy. And Jude is 13, and I just wanted you to hear from him because I read Psalm 78, that each generation should tell the next generation the things that God has done. that they might rise up and tell the next generation. And one of the advantages of getting old, there's some disadvantages, you know, you have a few more aches. I still swim laps, but I get a little stiff at times. But you have the joy of seeing some of the fruit that has come from the time. Wendy!
I'm so late. I just
finished my talk. And she's doing it. This is Wendy Palau, Andrew's wife, if you don't know already. She's famous.
No.
Diane and I, we were talking about you the other day. We love you so much. You just have so much.
Are you done now?
I just finished my talk, yeah. But they recorded it, anyway. But you get to hear Jude.
Yeah.
You know Jude, John Mark's number one. So this is so Luis Palau's son, Andrew, who's preaching the gospel all over the world. Wendy is his wife. Well, you know who Toby Mack is, right?
I've heard the name.
Yo, come on. Her sister's married to Toby. That makes her famous. But what's more famous is she's married to Andrew. So she goes around the world telling people about Jesus. So I just finished my talk, but I quoted Psalm 78, which says, each generation shall tell the next generation the great things God has done so that they might rise up and tell the next generation, the children yet to be born. So I said, I'm old enough now to have actually been able to experience some of the fruit of leading. So John Mark, Jude's dad, we were coming home from church one Sunday. He was 4 and a half, and he was in Sunday school class on Sunday. So you're in children's ministry, all right? And we had this Chinese couple, the Yees, Bill and Amy Yee, and they were four-year-old Sunday school class teachers, and they were like, that was their thing. Plus, he led this other men's ministry. We had like 1,000 men come out to these men's events. He led that too, and he was just a business guy. But once a year, they would clearly present the gospel to these kids. It was a planned thing in their curriculum. And this day, he talked about heaven and hell. And so we're invited to these friends for lunch, which was clear on the other side of Silicon Valley. So we're driving across the valley, and John Mark's in the back seat, and he's four, and this is your dad, he's 4 and a half. You've seen the spot, because we went there together. The spot where we pulled over, and I said, this is where your dad accepted the Lord. So he goes, I want to give my life to Jesus. I go, okay, John Mark, let's talk about that. So I'm driving. He goes, well, yeah. I go, well, why do you want to do that? And he said, well, because I need to give my life to him. And so, do you know who he is? Well, yeah, he gave his life for me. And do you believe you're a sinner? Yeah. And I'm just thinking, you know, as a parent, you want to make sure. Finally, he's if I don't accept Jesus, I'm going to hell. And I went, aah! And I stopped on the side of Capitol Expressway, which was a field. Now it's a strip mall. And he gave his life to the Lord. And so when you have a son or daughter at a young age, what you do is you keep reminding them and telling them and talking to them. So, you know, we went by that spot. I'd make sure I went by that spot. And I'd stop. Hey, John Mark, what happened right here? I gave my life to Jesus when he was 7, when he was 8, when he was 10. And so here's the cool thing. So he just turned 13. And my son, who's an amazing pastor, and he's speaking all over the place now and writing books and all, because people are so confused on what a biblical man of God is and what a biblical woman of God is, godly kids, my kids' age, who are in their late 20s to later 30s, my son is doing this thing with another pastor in New York named John Tyson called the Primal Path. It's kind of like the Jewish thing when your kid turns 13, for the next 3 years, you bring some men around him, and you say, so we did it. We went to his house, built a fire. It was kind of cold outside. John Mark invited me as his pops. He called me pops. All these other key men in his life, people from their community group, a pastor from Southern California.
A couple of them flew down for me.
And we were supposed to bring a gift that meant something and tell him why, share a scripture. And then John Mark said, okay, Jude, this is the beginning of your passage to manhood. And we're going to gather in this place around this fire 3 years from now. We're going to tell you if we're accepting you as a man. I'm going to start crying thinking about this. But I didn't do that with my kids, you know. And so my son, this is the cool thing. When you see your son, your kids far outpacing you, there's just no greater joy. It's like John the Baptist said, hey, John the Baptist, Jesus is baptizing more people than you. He goes, I know. It gives me great joy. He must increase and I must decrease. And so I watched this Primal Path thing. But he had already told me, he said, Dad, we're going to do this. And then the next day, I'm taking Jude, and I'm driving him on a, was it 5 day? Four or 5 day?
It was Three-day
trip down, road tripping, father, son, camping on the beach down to San Francisco, California, where John Mark was going to speak for a big church there.
Down Highway 1.
Talking about your beginning to be a man of God.
Yep.
And then, he hates road trips, my son. That was pure. He just doesn't like to drive. I love to drive.
Road trips are so much fun.
So he didn't want to drive all the way back. So I was down in the Bay Area also speaking with my wife. And he goes, hey, Dad, I want you to drive Jude home. And on the way from San Jose to Portland, 700 miles, tell him everything you know. I go, well, we'll be done by Sacramento. But anyway, so we got to drive all the way home. But he said, before that, I want to spend a day, you, me, and Jude. I want you to take Jude around to all the significant places in my life. So he goes, and I want to start with Grandpa and Grandma's grave, my parents. So we go to their grave, and he goes, Jude, your story didn't start here. It didn't even start with your pops. It started with your great-grandma and grandpa, which he didn't know. And so I got to baptize my parents when they were 66 and 67. So he hears the story. He goes, could you pray? So Jude's kneeling at my parents' grave, praying for his walk with God. I mean, this is like Bible stuff, guys. This is like evangelism. This is why, and it's not just your own family. It's how important children are everywhere we go. So, and then we went to the spot where your dad accepted the Lord. And we told him the story I just told you. And then we prayed in that spot. And then we went to another spot where different things happened in his dad's life. And so I think probably more important than anything I ever said is just hearing from here. This is third generation. This is Psalm 78 next. Okay, so just tell us your story. And I'm going to show a little video of him. And then we'll do Q&A and prayer. Okay, you got it.
So it started when I was really little. I was six.
Not even quite. I think a little younger.
Yeah. I was young. I don't remember exactly.
Maybe only five.
Yeah, I was
pretty
young.
I know you got up on a Sunday and quoted a scripture in church.
I remember that. That was a funny moment. But. So I was driving home with my dad. We were coming back, I think, from running errands somewhere at like Target or Trader Joe's. I don't remember. And we were coming down, and I can show you exactly the spot where we pulled over. He's in his awesome old Land Cruiser. And we pull over because I said, Daddy, I want to give my life to Jesus. I had the cutest little lisp. You'll see it in the video. It's so funny. But we pulled over. Dad talked me through it, just like Pop talked it through with my dad. And I gave my life to Jesus. And I remember that drive home was really, it felt really long, even though it was like 3 minutes. So I came home, and my mom's making dinner at the kitchen. And I run to that, Mommy, I'm a Christian now. And she goes, oh! And she starts crying, and it's awesome. And then a few years pass. I turn 12, and I go into my first year of middle school. And here is where things start to not go so well. I still follow God. I still love Jesus. I traveled with my dad a bit, but this was when I first started traveling with him. So I go to middle school. I definitely get in with the wrong crowd. Not good group of guys. I got in a couple fights over stupid things. And not good grades. It was just not going well. It was not going well. On that track, I would have stopped following that. So
I got in with the wrong crowd. My parents took me out of school for my 7th and 8th grade year. I'm in my 8th grade year right now. I'm being homeschooled. I was homeschooled throughout my 7th grade year. It was amazing. I didn't have people to get into fights with. I got my soul back. But before I started being homeschooled, my dad took me on what was possibly going to be my last trip with him because I had been a pretty foul kid. Not foul mouth, but I just hadn't been, you know what I mean. So we went to Ireland, and I'm having a bad attitude, I'm entitled, acting like a son's brat. I was not a very good kid. And we go in, and this conference starts. And I had been, up until that point, having some suicidal thoughts. I had contemplated killing myself. I had come very close to it at multiple points. There was like, we went to see this really big cliff that had like this like cool cliff that had like tiny little chicken wire fence around it. Not safe, definitely not safe. Really pretty, not safe. And I thought about it. That was the closest I'd ever come. And then I felt like someone hit me with a lightning ball and boom. And I just like kind of, whoa. I like had like a little shock. And I walked back to Dad and told him everything, because I hadn't told anyone that I had been having these thoughts. And he was like, he didn't know any of this. So later that day, we went to a big conference. And at this conference, there was a guy I'd met in Orange County on one of my other trips, named Darren Rounzen. Some of you might have heard of him.
It's a pastor of it. It's called The Garden in Long Beach, California.
He's a great guy, awesome guy. I'd met him then, before, and we'd been like, oh yeah, we should get together, something the same type of the Enneagram, probably. And he was there for some reason. He was speaking there too. And he was there with his dad too, Darren's the same age as my dad, and his dad's about the same age as you.
Okay.
Maybe a couple years younger. And long story short, I had some really weird encounters. During that, I felt like something was inside of me trying to break out, because it knew what was going to happen that night. I had been under the influence. I wasn't possessed, but I was under the influence, I think, of an evil spiritual presence. And it hadn't been controlling me, but it had been saying like, oh, you should do this. Oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. You should do this instead. And I was so unaccustomed to it that I didn't know it was there until the conference. And I it was very hard to control my body during that maybe hour of like talk and everything. And finally I came up to Darren and just asked him to pray for me. And I told him all about my suicidal thoughts and all of that. And he told me some amazing things and we prayed over it. And I felt during the prayer like something was inside of me trying to hold on or let go. And it finally, I finally opened the door so that it could leave. And I think that it had known what was going to come, and that, and it didn't want to be there when that happened, even though it had a very strong hold on me. And it left, and I've been a different person since. You can ask anyone. I'm getting, last year I was basically straight B's. This year I have a couple A's now.
Yeah.
The year before that, my sixth grade year, it was straight F's and D's. So this is a pretty significant improvement.
What about the night, the worship that night, where the daughter of Delirious singer Martin Smith, Ellie, was leading worship, and what happened then? Like
that was also another part of that. That Darren took me up and sat me on the stage while everybody was doing worship, and Ellie was there just. It felt like she was speaking to me through the song. I think in two different ways. I think mainly in blueprints. I see things and I understand how to build them. And secondly, I see things in music. I see spiritual presences sometimes, which I'd never met anyone who could do that until I went on a retreat with my middle school group and the guest speaker, who you actually probably know. You know Jesse from our church. Do you know his wife, Lauren?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, you probably know them.
Yeah.
But she spoke with me and it was amazing. And I've just been a different person since my Ireland
encounter.
And it's insane. It's honestly insane. I never thought that I would become the person I am today without my dad. My dad is the most amazing man I have ever met. With my grandpa and my youth pastor riding second and third.
Thanks, Jude. All right. You know, I wanted to hear you hear that story because, you know, the family, we were all, you see the beauty and the innocence of Jude now. It had disappeared. Jude, from a young age, had this just wonder and memorizing scripture. He read the whole book of Exodus when you were like, I mean, your dad.
I remember that.
Yeah, your dad
that.
Said he'd take you out to lunch if you did or something, but it's like he's just devouring the Bible. And then he got this hard. One night, I'm super outgoing. I took him out. I bought him all kinds of sushi, took him to ice cream, and I could not get through to him. Mm. You know, his heart was just hardened. And then he had this massive breakthrough, which came through prayer. And, you know, now he's getting to travel. Jamark's taking him everywhere, and Jamark's speaking all over the world. You know, he's been to Iceland, Australia, New Zealand. Not most kids. But so I think whenever a child gives their life to Jesus, there was a battle for his soul because there's a calling on his life. And so we should not be surprised at that. And so we knew from a young age that God's going to do something unique through this little boy. And so there was a spiritual warfare going on, a spiritual battle going on. And the parents sensed it and took action to deal with it. And this has turned into a beautiful story. But it took some time. I mean, my wife and I do this prayer walk where we try to pray for all of our kids and our grandkids. And we were praying for God, you've got to move in Jude's heart. And we would pray and pray and pray for you. And then he FaceTimed us from Ireland. Pops, I'm back. You know, like it was just really, really great. So I'm going to show this little video. When we do our parenting conference and we get to the end of it, we go birth through 22. We're trying to give parents hope. Like, they're, you know, I've got a 2-year-old and I'm exhausted and I'm changing diapers and this is all I ever do. And you know, is it really worth it? And so one of the things we show is the morning after he first gave his life to the Lord as a 5-year-old or whatever, we were all at the same church called Solid Rock in Portland. So the next morning, we were in the green room, and he came running in. Pops, I became a Christian. And we had a worship pastor, Dave Lubin, who Wendy knows, and he's a super artsy guy. He saw this going on. He picked up his iPhone and started filming it. And I didn't even know he was doing it. Jude was just talking to me, and then Dave went home and edited this little thing and put some music to it. And so now we show it at the end of our conference to give parents hope that this is why you're doing what you're doing. But now you've heard the rest of the story, but just look at this. Here we go. That's what it's all about, gang. You know, I always tell parents, if you ever get that moment, he didn't get the brothers in the Lord part. That was the dumbest thing to say. You know, hey, we're brothers in the Lord. You didn't get that.
I said, okay.
I was trying to say we're going to be in heaven forever. So I blew the moment, but it didn't matter. Okay. All right. Well, hey, that's all that we have to share. Do any of you want to ask any questions before we just gather around the tables and... You know, I think the idea of these workshops is to spend a little time just if you need prayer, like, hey, I'd really love prayer about this or that, or do you have any advice for me about this or that? But do you have any questions you want to ask me or Jude or Wendy, who's a wealth of amazing wisdom? Or Mark, who I just got to know. He's Rolling Hills family pastor, Wendy. Yeah. Anybody?
Is Jude, are you the oldest grandchild?
Yep, I am.
How many more do you have to go, Phil?
Well, right now we have 7. He's the oldest.
You got to do more praying and walking and fasting.
Yeah, exactly.
There are 2 couples still walking on kids. I'm so mad right now. I'm so frustrated. They need children.
Okay.
But you can always pull, I am the firstborn grandson. Your dad pulls the same card. All right. Yeah, there's 7. Jude down to Sloan, Brooke and Elizabeth's little one, who's 1. And Matthew and Simona haven't started yet.
And that's cool, Jude, because you're going to be an example to your cousins. God's going to use you in their lives. Because the little cousins always look up to the older ones, right?
Yeah.
They already copy everything you do, right?
Kind of. It's good that they don't copy some of it.
But, you know,
that
is already happening. Duke, who's 10, was going through some struggles also at school. And Jude came over to Bend, Oregon, and spent a couple of days, and he was counseling Duke. Like, Duke, when I went through this time, and this is what, you know, so it's so cool to see what happened. Yeah. Okay, well, we should probably have you come over to one of these tables, and we're supposed to be done at a quarter till, so we got about 15 minutes. And no pressure here. If there's nothing else you want to do or you want to take off or whatever, that's cool. But, what? Yes.
I have something.
Oh, a question or a comment?
Comment.
Okay, you guys, we have a comment here.
I have five grandsons. They're 16, 15, 14, 13, and 7.
Wow.
And I've been praying for them every day. And one day when I was praying for them, one of the things you said really hit me, because God said, have me fight for them. Yeah. That is one of my prayers for my grandsons.
Okay.
The second one was, I was reading... my devotional was talking about Isaiah, waiting for God's presence. And he said, God came to him in a whisper. And God said, pray that I'll whisper in their ear what they mean to me. So
yeah.
That's the second thing. And I was telling my brother, because he has grandkids now, and he said, and the third thing is ask God to seal them.
Yeah, okay.
Put his seal on them.
I love it.
And it's something we need to do every day.
Yeah.
Pray for our children and grandchildren. So.
I love all of that. And the fighting for your child.
Yeah.
We fight in, you know, Ephesians 6, was we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, which is what his testimony is. But after all the armor goes on, right? Put on the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit, it goes down. And pray at all times in the Spirit. So that's where the battle's won, right? We all know this. You've been through sermons on this, but it's prayer. And, you know, this is a passion of Wendy's, and she has the whole Palau. Look at what God's doing through the Louise Palau team. Well, there's prayers being offered up, but she heads up that ministry. It's so important. But I've had moms especially, I think dads too, but moms get this fierce fighting for my child, not with my boy. And we had one of our kids where we had one of them that we were really concerned about at a certain point. And it was, we just felt like the evil one's after her, you know. And I think you have a sense as a parent when that's happening. And there is fighting for your child, fasting, praying. So thank you for bringing that up. Yeah.